This podcast sponsored by Cherry Hill Volvo.
At Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers, and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Cherry Hill Volvo team compliments you for choosing the Rich Scioli podcast. Relationships matter to all of us, and our team is eager to establish a relationship with you, the Scioli listener. Contact Cherry Hill Volvo.
Now, 60 minutes of nonstop talk on the Rich Scioli podcast.
All right, it's an hour of nonstop talk, unprecedented in Morning Drive Radio. Welcome to the show. We're so glad you're here. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Scioli and Facebook.com/Scioli Show. As the nation begins to reopen, we are confronted by tyrannical governors, and I've been spending most of the time on that this show today. We'll continue to do so, but I would like to play for you some audio right now. I would like to play for you, first of all, the Atlanta mayor. Who warned everybody that it would be terrible if we reopened up the city and everybody would get sick and die. Again, the central premise of where people are today on the modern left. All right. I don't mean liberals of days gone by. I think liberals today are much different than liberals from the 1960s. I think that liberals of the 1960s were much more advocates for freedom than liberals today. Liberals today are all about government control of you, protecting you from yourself. Wise government telling you what you can and can't do. That never would have flown on the campus of Berkeley in 1969. No chance. But that's the change. That's how liberalism today has changed. Like, I think, for example, of somebody who would say, like Bill Maher, for example, is a great, I'd say a liberal who still is that kind of a liberal mindset. Doesn't want government controlling him, is tired of the political correctness. You hate his politics, but he's in your face about it. Liberals today are much more about, you know, making sure everything's politically correct, censoring words, making sure people aren't hurt by hearing words that trigger them or offend them. And they're much more about the government telling you how you should live your life for the greater good. Like I said, that crap would not have flown in 1969 on the campus of Berkeley. So that's where we are today. With Democrats today, the modern day left, acting like our parents, whether it's Bill de Blasio, that jackass telling us that we can't go swimming, he'll put up fences if he catches us going swimming, or Gretchen Whitmer telling us that, you know, we can't get our hair cut, or Phil Murphy calling us knuckleheads. It is a mindset. This is the Atlanta mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, who was on the 11th hour with Brian Williams, which does not air at the 11th hour of the day. It airs at the 23rd hour of the day. Nevertheless, cut five.
Mayor, I believe I remember when we were talking to you prior to the quote-unquote reopening of Georgia, which, as we know, was very early. And let's also note there's a robust conversation going on about the quality of the numbers we're all getting out of the state of Georgia. But I think I remember you saying that you hoped to be wrong, that you hoped the situation would be better than you feared. And if you were, in fact, wrong, you would say to the governor, I was wrong. Is it a little muddier than being able to say I was right or I was wrong? Are we, as of the time of this conversation, somewhere in the middle, do you think?
What I can say, Brian, is it's not as bad as I thought that it would be. So I am pleased about that. But I still think it's too soon to say, the reason being, whereas initially we were seeing increases between deaths and people testing positive rising anywhere from 25 to 30% over a 7-day period. Right now, we're somewhere between 12 and 15%. And so it's better than it was, but it's still not great. We've still not seen that 14-day decline as recommended by the CDC. So we're not quite there where I can say that we are out of the woods, because we are not, because what we know is as we reopen the state will also see whether or not this impacts our number of people who are testing positive.
You know, what's fascinating, of course, is that it's almost like they're rooting for things to get bad again, just so that they can show that they were right. You know, just like they can show that we were right. Now, let's assume, for example, for a second, they're right, we're wrong, that we should not open up America, right? We're wrong by saying we should open up because more people are going to get sick. Now, again, I got a nice email yesterday from somebody who is a fan of the show who disagrees with me on this point and believes that the virus is still spreading and we have to be much more careful than we're being. All right. Here's my question. Assuming that we don't have a vaccine for several years, and again, I'm not going to debate vaccines. I'm saying that that is the metric point that the president and governors are using is a widely distributed vaccine that works. Assuming that that could take years or maybe never, do we stay like this indefinitely? What's the backup plan? I need to know what the backup plan is. Are we going to have this lockdown where half the businesses are open and half aren't, and the ones that are open, curbside pickup, and you still can't go to restaurants? What is your backup plan if 2 years from now, hell, 1 year from now, we're still discussing whether or not that vaccine breakthrough is going to come or that antiviral breakthrough is going to come? What's your backup plan? Because it can't be this. Like, we can't sustain this. This cannot be sustained. So again, my goal is not to get people sick. I've never downplayed the virus. I've never once said that the virus was a hoax. I was all in on doing my part, answering the president's call to do my part for 2 weeks to slow the spread. But I get accused of those things, of course, whenever I raise the question of what do we do? What's our backup plan? If we don't have a cure or antiviral therapy, what do we do? I don't hear the backup plan from people on the left. I just hear that we just can't do it yet. Well, when does the yet happen? According to Governor Phil Murphy of New Jersey, it's when there is, and I quote, a widely distributed vaccine. Until that point, we could be like this. New Jersey can't sustain that. Nobody can sustain that. It's not practical. It's not logical. So what's your backup plan? Walk around with masks, social distance, keep everything half closed, half open. Is that really a reasonable, doable future for us if there's no cure, no vaccine? If it is, in your opinion, then why don't we get started on that as soon as possible? If it's not, and you want something even more draconian than that, how do we survive that if we can barely survive this? See, I don't hear that backup plan from people. I just hear them acting like we're all being idiots who wanted to go out until there's a vaccine, until there's a cure, until there's an antiviral drug that can really beat this thing. But that could be never. There's no vaccine for HIV. There's no vaccine for the common cold. The vaccine for the flu is a hit or miss kind of thing. And usually what it does is, my doctor friend told me, it really just makes sure you don't die from it. It doesn't keep you from getting it necessarily. So if that's the standard that they're using, that is an insane, impossible, impractical, unachievable standard for opening our country, to getting us back to where we were. Can't work. It cannot work. We will be destroyed as a nation. So I ask people who are against this idea of rushing to reopen, quote unquote rushing, what's your alternative? We just stay in our houses from now until we get a cure? Is that it? And if the cure never comes, we just never leave the house? Come on, that doesn't pass the common sense test. You know that. You know that. So if they're unhappy with what we're doing now, which is opening up at 50% capacity, wearing masks and social distancing, and they're still unhappy with that, and they think we're moving too quickly in that direction, and I don't think we're moving fast enough to reopen America back to be the way it was. We just don't have the luxury, unfortunately, of sitting around and going, you know what? We'll wait. We'll wait till medicine conquers this thing. We haven't cured cancer. We've been trying, right? We can treat cancer. We can't cure it. We can treat a lot of things. We can't cure it. But the idea that there's this magic, I mean, look, they're doing trials. They're having great success. But that could all change tomorrow. The vaccine can make us all into zombies. The vaccine could not work. The vaccine could work on half the people. The vaccine could not be able to be widely distributed enough. Then there could be, and I'm not debating vaccines. I'm simply saying that if that's the metric that society is using, that's insane. It's impractical. It cannot work. So we got to come up with a better plan. So if the plan is open up like everything was normal before and just do herd immunity and keep the most vulnerable people protected, that's one plan. But if you even bring that up, you're irresponsible and want to kill people. If the plan is we'll do this for a long time, hoping we get a cure or treatment or something, we'll do this for a long time, then people are, the reality is people turn around and go, yeah, but I can't sustain that lifestyle. My business, my restaurant, I can't live like that. And then if you go to the third, which is the most extreme of the three, which is we don't even open up at all right now. We keep basically shut down in our houses until there's a cure or drug. We're gone. As a country, it's over. There's no way we can sustain that. No chance. Not even if government pays all of us a salary. We can't sustain that. Because government doesn't print magic money. I mean, it won't be worth anything. Government gets money from taxes we pay after earning a living. So that's unsustainable too. So what's the backup plan? I would love to hear it. What is the backup plan? And this is not, by the way, the only thing. I mean, Joy Behar, who's a moron, she was on TV yesterday comparing lockdown protesters to the same people in Charlottesville. So if you're out there protesting because you want to work, you want to earn a living, you want to feed your family, you want to keep the lights on, you need to be out there earning income. You don't have a job as a blowhard on daytime talk television, and you're protesting this stuff, you get put down by the likes of her. I have a feeling Joy Behar doesn't know what it's like to miss a paycheck. I think The View probably makes sure all their people are paid on time, I would think, right? Don't you think? But this is the judgment, cut seven.
Nothing that he ever does, that you know who does, nothing just surprises me. I'm certainly not surprised by this, because let's not forget when he called white supremacists and neo-Nazis in Charlottesville great people, quote unquote. You know, it's his MO to destroy the press, because the press will tell you the truth, and the truth hurts him in his reelection plan. And, you know, he's worried. He's very worried. Joe Biden is pulling ahead. Not that this is anything new. He's always been a denigrator of the truth, calling the press the enemy of the people, which is right out of Putin's book and Stalin and Hitler and all the dictators that he admires so much. I'm not sure he admired Hitler, but he certainly admires Putin. And that's what they do, is to denigrate the press. That's the first thing dictators do.
It sounds to me like the press is more than free and fair to be able to come back and fight back. I don't really know how that's exactly like a dictator. Dictators used to shoot the press and kill them, and also put them in camps and ban them from writing bad things about them. Like one of the heroes of the left, Woodrow Wilson, for example, who actually, it was a federal crime for you to write negative stories about his handling of either the war or the Spanish flu. Then, of course, the question becomes, if we don't ever reopen, what do we do? I mean, just what happens now? How do things work for America? How does this possibly happen? Judge Andrew Napolitano was on with Tucker Carlson last night. I think the judge said it really, really well here in terms of how we're looking at these lockdowns. Like, for example, there's a mom out there who child services was called on her kids because she just dared to open up her salon in Oregon. Oregon salon opener, Lindsey Graham, she owns a salon. She says, as state authorities dispatched Child Protective Services to her home as part of their response to her ongoing business operations in defiance of Governor Kate Brown's stay-at-home order. She owns Glamour Salon. She described harassment and bullying directed against her by the government. And she said that Oregon's Child Protective Services, a subsidiary of the state's Department of Human Services, was sent to her home on the same day as the reopening of her hair salon. This is what they do. This is the new mindset of the left in America today. It's not the 1960s liberals who would say, it's freedom, man. Take a chance, take a risk. It's your life, your body, your life. No. Very, very different mindset now of today's totalitarian left. But this is what Judge Napolitano said at Tucker, cut 10.
Profoundly, people should say something about it. Yesterday, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin did, when it said to the governor's people, you do not have the authority for the lockdown, only the legislature does, and the legislature's told us they don't want it, and you cannot write your own laws and enforce the laws that you have just written. That violates the Wisconsin Constitution, and by the way, the American Constitution, and therefore the lockdown is ended. I don't expect the same thing to happen in Michigan, but Tucker, the definition of a free state is one where the laws are written to uphold personal liberties. The definition of a police state is one where the laws are written, legitimately or not, to uphold what the government wants. We are not gradually, but all of a sudden, in a period of 6 weeks, going from a free state, this is happening in all 50 states, to a police state. An example you just cited in Michigan is violative not only of Michigan law and the Michigan Constitution, but the United States Constitution as well. She can't take his livelihood away from him because he spoke out against her.
Well, that's exactly.
That's what the fascists did that we fought against in World War II.
See, that's what the judge is talking about here, is the idea that if you criticize Governor Whitmer, you'll be in trouble for that. If you criticize her, if you go against her orders, and she's very nasty, you know, she goes on TV and says, I'm doing whatever I want to do. I'm doing this anyway. These governors, there's no check on them. You realize that there's supposed to be in this country checks and balances. The legislative branch is supposed to be the check on the governor. And there's no check and balance right now. And again, I go back to the question I posed earlier. If the metric for society going back to normal is a vaccine or some viral therapy that cures this thing that makes it go away, if that's the metric they're using, that could take years. It could never happen. Do we just live under an emergency rule forever? Which just never ends. We're always under a lockdown. We're always under executive orders. Legislatures in some states cease to exist. One guy runs the show for millions and millions and tens of millions of people. One guy or woman runs the entire show, making all the decisions because there's a virus out there. Does that sound logical to anybody? There are always crises and existential threats facing our country every day. We don't just suspend the Constitution and put one person in charge because there's things that could hurt us out there. So we're doing it for this virus, supposed to be a short-term basis to flatten the curve. Now, we flatten the curve, but now it's find the cure, find the vaccine. Until we do that, it's going to stay like this, and we'll have this ongoing executive state of emergency. And if you try to defy it, you will go down. You will go down if you defy it. Here's a clip that we pulled this morning from NBC 10. Right here in Philadelphia. They were doing coverage of Attila's gym and also a Pennsylvania gym opener as well. Cut 13.
Yeah, I'm not concerned it will spiral out of control, and we will take action. And I think if someone shows up, I don't know this, Matt, to be the case. If you show up at that gym again tomorrow, there's going to be a different reality than showing today. I mean, that's just, these aren't just words. We've got to enforce this. But I also don't want to start World War III.
The state says local police did issue a violation summons. Trombetti and co-owner Ian Smith say they didn't open today, to not open again tomorrow.
You know, this has been extremely oppressive, and then this is how we get everybody back. And then tomorrow we're going to open up again, and we're going to encourage everybody else, go out there and do it. But make sure you're compliant.
Reporting from Belmar, Sydney Long, NBC 10 News.
See, this is a big problem right now that we have, which is the Governor Murphy says he's not going to tolerate this. Again, one guy's in charge right now. Not the New Jersey legislature passing a law that says nobody can go to gyms. One guy issuing these orders, and you cannot challenge his orders, and there's no check on him. There's no checks and balances. That is not America. Again, I try to think of the mindset of the 1960s liberals at Berkeley. Would they put up with one person making all the decisions like this? No. Right? I mean, they would be calling that person a fascist. But now, if you criticize him, you're not helpful, you're spreading misinformation, you want people to die, you want people to get sick. No, I don't. I just want our country to legislate like we're supposed to legislate. Even though there's a virus out there, we still are supposed to act like the United States of America. We're still supposed to act like the country we are, which means the legislature should either pass a law saying you can't go to gyms, or this emergency nonsense has to end. Right now. And then when that law is passed and the governor signs it, I want to challenge in court because I think it's unconstitutional. But you see what we're doing right now? We are allowing totalitarianism to run rampant. And it's dangerous. It's really, really dangerous for our future. 855-839-1210 is our number. 855-839-1210.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
All right. Turning our attention to the other governor that we've been discussing all day today. This is the love gov Andrew Cuomo. Now, Greg, I see there's two cuts here. Could you do me a favor and just explain the cuts to me, please?
Yes. So he had with these cuts is there's a big PowerPoint presentation next to him. So everything he says is backed up by words on the screen. He was talking about sports coming back. He was talking about reopening. And in this first cut here, he's talking about reopening New York, and he's not going by opinions. He's going by facts. Mm-hmm. And he says that over and over and over again with many facts and many opinions and many it's self-evident why I pulled this first cut.
Well, we'd love to hear it. This is, of course, Governor Andrew Cuomo. Take a listen.
What will reopening mean? Right. That's a big topic of discussion now. What does reopening mean? This is not a subject that is a political subject or where political opinions really matter. I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, Independent. I don't care. I don't care. This is not a political exercise that we are going through. People say, well, I have a personal opinion. I don't even care about your personal opinion. I don't think you should care about my personal opinion. Because it's not about a personal opinion. It's not about an ideological opinion. It's not about a geographic opinion. It's not even an opinion that's relevant.
It's not even an opinion at all. Not an ideological opinion, a philosophical opinion. It's not even an opinion. Why are you bringing it up?
It took him 45 seconds to say what he could have said in three.
Right. That's what he does. He just rambles and rambles and has to give 18 examples to back up everything that he's possibly trying to say. Is there more of this?
This is about facts and science and data. These decisions are being made as a matter of math. It's numbers. It's math.
Yes.
That's all it is at the end of the day.
Right.
You start to increase economic activity. You have more people coming out of their homes, more people contacting other people, and then you measure the impact of that increase with numbers.
Numbers, man.
Not with opinions, not with politics, not with partisanship, with numbers. And
numbers.
Then you just measure the impact.
Andy Numbers over here. Andrew Numbers. Is that done?
Yes, that's the end of that.
Very good. You measure it with numbers. Got it? Not opinions, not philosophical ideas, not fortune cookies, not tea leaves, not choose your own adventure books. Numbers. Math. Numbers and math. Math and numbers. Addition, subtraction, division, compound fractures.
You got it.
Square root of 10.
It's true.
This is Cuomo now. We took a hard blow. Now, he tries to get inspirational here, to rally everybody, to look towards a better tomorrow, right?
Again, this is we're not making fun of the substance of what he's saying. It's just the fact that it's going to take him 2 minutes to say what he can literally say in 10 seconds.
Right. He could have had a 30-second inspirational, motivational speech, but instead drags it out for 2 minutes. Take a listen.
We took a hard blow, and we got knocked down. No fault of our own. Whoever created that virus, Mother Nature, God, whoever. No fault of our own. Welcome to life. Things happen outside of your control that you couldn't do anything about, but it just happens. And then the question becomes, are you strong enough to get back up once life knocks you down? And are you smart enough to learn from what you went through in life? And when you get back up, you will be the better for it. I believe that. That's my story. That's our story.
All right.
That's the story of Buffalo.
We're all riled up.
Getting knocked down, changing the economy. All right. But we're going to get back up because we're strong enough, and we're going to learn from it because we're smart enough.
All right.
That's the story of Buffalo.
Got it.
That's the story of New York. That
is
the American story.
Okay, we do this every town out in the state.
Right? It's what made this country.
That it now?
It's like a story.
The best. That's the story of Lake Placid?
Not that we didn't get knocked down. We got knocked down plenty. But we were smart enough to learn and strong enough to get back up. And that's where we have to set our sights. Not about reopening.
No.
We're going to make this place better than ever before. Because what we went through is a transformative experience in life. On an individual level and on a social level.
A metaphysical
level? We're not going to be the people we were the day before.
No, we're different people.
We're going to be better.
Better people.
We're going to be smarter.
Smarter.
We're going to be stronger for what we went through. We're going to be a stronger society for what we went through.
Oh, my God. This guy's such a windbag.
And we're going to have a stronger Buffalo, a stronger New York, and a stronger America.
Stronger Tupper Lake, a stronger Middletown, New York, Greenwood Lake, New York. Hang on. I got to get my list. A stronger Rochester. We're going to have a stronger Westchester. They rhyme. What is rhyming? Do I have to talk about rhyming? I don't know. I mean, should I? Do they rhyme on purpose? Do you like to rhyme to your children? We're going to be better rhymers after this.
The amount of times he said get knocked down, I think the new theme song for New York is going to be this. I get knocked
down. Well, it certainly is catchy, that's for sure. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. We're gonna reopen up in northern New York and southern New York. We're gonna pick ourselves back up in eastern New York and western New York and central New York, Woodstock and Saugerties, New York. Oh my God, this guy with the blowhard. He doesn't stop. All right, 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210 is our number for you to weigh in today. Steve is in Oxford. Steve.
Hey, good morning, Rich.
Hey, good morning,
one
Steve.
One thing I've never been able to figure out. I've been following politics, understand how the left operates, but the older people like Joy Behar and those people, the Woodstock generation who was always against government, you know, power to the people. When did their mindset turn? Like, they're all about government now. I don't get it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, the mindset of the left used to be individual freedom and you know, craziness and everything like that. And now it's the opposite, right? Now, modern-day liberalism is all about government control, controlling every aspect of your life for the greater good, banning words so you don't offend other people, making decisions for you, taking away things that could hurt you. I mean, that's modern-day liberalism right there. All right, Greg, thanks for the call, but I think I lost you, Mark. Sorry. Let me go to Greg in Flowertown. Greg, how are you, sir?
Hello, Rich. Hello, everybody.
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm great. I think you need a new nickname, though, for the Love Gov. He's the extrapolator. This guy's magnificent. Everything. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We got May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, Christmas. Christmas lights, trees, the manger scene, the three wise men, like Wolf and Murphy and Cuomo. I made it funny, you know? He just goes on. I don't understand how he can do this. He loves to hear himself speak because his first statement usually is pretty good. I will give that to him, first or second. But then he just goes on. So he's now the extrapolator. He might be the extrapolating Love Gov. I don't think you can just go with the Love Gov anymore, Rich.
The extrapolator. Yeah, he's the extrapolator in chief, no doubt about it. And I like words? I mean, what is a word? Loves the sound of his voice more than anybody I've ever heard in my life.
He is definitely the quintessential showman in his own eyes and ears.
Yeah, exactly.
He has the video cameras and the film. And the TV, if there was a caption above his head, it was all showing, pointing at him. And he's enjoying it. And he actually, he's pretty good at it for not being as eloquent, as smooth as like a Barack Obama who did the same thing, but was much more eloquent and smooth. This guy, I think he's funny. I think he's catching me on. He's just as funny now as Megaphone Bernie. But when angry Megaphone Bernie's better. But they need to have a debate, I believe, that the extrapolating Love Gov and Megaphone Bernie need a debate, Rich.
When we start to lighten
up a little bit and we need some levity, I think those two should make an appearance on the Always Show.
Well, I think you're right. We could certainly, as America, use some levity. You know what I mean? They could certainly use some levity for that, don't you think?
Oh, if we show up with levity, we'll not be worried about the sick, or we're going to be just worried about ourselves or something. And they'll find a reason. There'll be a reason why there cannot be levity. That would actually mean we'd have to go out of the house. You might have to get a little closer to somebody. So that might be banned, Rich.
I understand. I understand completely. I understand completely. Understood. Got it. Check. And understood, acknowledged, and received. Received and submitted. Thank you very much for the call. 855-839-1210.
Thanks for taking the Zioli Show with you. Rich Zioli, weekday mornings on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Ah, yes. Well, Greg, thank you for pulling that cut. We appreciate it very, very much.
That's what
the
I do,
audio
man.
Of that just, is fantastic.
Yeah, just trying to... I'm just trying... It's, you know, like, you know, to lift up the curtain a little bit, it is hard to find stuff to, you know, goof on. But Andrew Cuomo, pretty much on a daily basis, not what he says, but the way he says it is just a way to lighten the mood. And he's.
I think you've clearly stated now we are not making fun of Andrew Cuomo for his virus response. We are making fun of how he says it, because how he says it, Greg, is really the essence of his response.
And he's a self-admitted bad communicator, according to his
daughter. Yes, he said that. He said that a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
The words that he uses, Greg, are words that he chooses to use. And words have various meanings. For some people, they mean one thing. For someone else, they mean something else. For a third person, something else entirely. For a fourth person, that might be someone else's own interpretation. You interpret things, Greg, through your own lens, a filter, something that takes something out and removes something and puts something in something else. You understand?
I do.
There you go.
Thank you.
So I think you've done a good job of letting all of us know that you've put a disclaimer. What is a disclaimer really? A warning?
Oh, no. It's
something that would go and tell people what you should do or not do? All right. Also have this amazing ad from Joe Biden, his ad for president of the United States, which I think, by the way, is going to win him the election. No doubt about it. I really do. I think if anybody, it's going to be him. This is huge. I'm going to play this to you though after the news because it's really, really good. I mean, this might be the way that he pulls this off. I'm not sure, but we'll talk about it. But first, here on the Zioli Show, let's say good morning to Dawn and check in.
Yes, and good morning. We have 55 degrees. Zioli Show News sponsored by Hint Water. There is a high surf advisory in effect down the shore. So we have Pennsylvania and Philadelphia leaders saying don't go to the shore this weekend. They're warning. It's just too risky, they say, to go out in the crowds where you can catch COVID-19. So we have no word when Philadelphia and surrounding counties can begin reopening. We did hear yesterday that they are planning to reopen Philadelphia's courts, civil and criminal, sometime in early September. So hopefully everything else opens before then. So right now we're watching and monitoring the fate of these two South Jersey gym owners reopen their business in defiance of Governor Phil Murphy's executive order to shut down. It looks like I'm just monitoring all the different live shots because this is making obviously national and local news. So maybe only 10 or 12 members have been lined up, but we don't see police on the scene yesterday. So those owners of Belmar-based Attilus Gym, they were issued a citation. There's a GoFundMe page now that's raised about 15 grand. So we'll see if there are arrests, because we did see Governor Phil Murphy and just heard that where he spoke out yesterday saying they're going to face a different fate if they show up today. The warning also went out to members, not just the owners, but to members of the gym. So that's so we're watching this because obviously Governor Phil Murphy not happy. The governors of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, they're under fire nationally for their controversial nursing home policy decisions that critics say really fueled coronavirus deaths in those facilities. If you've missed Zioli talking about this, you need to listen to today's podcast. Very important. Okay, so we talked earlier about water and COVID-19. So I've been looking at this. Researchers say coronavirus strains can survive 12 days in room temperature tap water, two to three days in room temperature wastewater. Okay, so the survival of coronaviruses in water, prompting labs around the nation to begin using sewage monitoring. That's happening right now as they try to track COVID-19. What about large bodies of water, like lakes, rivers, or the ocean, the shore? Well, the concentration of the virus would be diluted. The CDC says there is absolutely no evidence that you can be infected through recreational swimming, and the risk of COVID-19 transmission would be very low. So we have that from the CDC.
So then why can't we swim?
Well, that's
why can't we swim is my question then, if it's very, very low.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you should be banned from swimming off New York City beaches all the time because they're disgusting. But otherwise, why is this any different?
See, you're right. I just was thinking there must be something out there. So I was researching that And there is nobody says that you could catch COVID-19 by swimming in any water.
Yes. Well, you know what? If you go in the water, the people that will go in the water to get you, they will catch COVID-19.
Yes, that's right.
Just know that.
You're putting the first responders at risk under their theory.
Yeah, you won't get COVID-19, but they will if they go in to get you and rescue you from swimming yourself.
You talked a lot about vaccines. So we talked about that monkey vaccine that has shown a great deal of promise at Oxford University. There's another one, the first results from human trials of a vaccine against COVID-19. And they're really giving hope with a group of just 8 volunteers. But the critical part is their antibody response is on par with that seen in people who've had the disease. So they suggest the vaccine is safe for use in humans. So another hopeful vaccine test that's going on right now. Finally, I want to talk about rabbits, because the rabbits are in danger.
The rabbits are giving us COVID-19. It wasn't a bat. It was a rabbit.
So there is word of this deadly virus. It's a threat to rabbits. It has made its way to California now. First case in America. It's called rabbit hemorrhage disease. And the virus just wipes out rabbits, hares, or pikas. And it's spreading rapidly. It's a rabbit virus. So it's killing both wild and domestic rabbits. So protect your pet bunnies. So it's carried by long distance by insects, birds, and other animals on shoes, clothes, and car tires.
Car tires too?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. Now there's no evidence, much like the original Chinese bats, there's no evidence that it's contagious to humans yet.
Oh, okay. Yes, but it's coming, right? We should probably stay locked down forever then.
See, we should.
We should never open up.
The Greg Stocker theory.
Just keep us in our homes indefinitely then. We don't have to worry about killer bunnies and whatever else.
Killer bunnies. Killer bunnies, bees. Hey, this news, speaking of water, is brought to you by Good Water, Hint Water. Pure water infused with surprisingly true fruit flavors. Watermelon, blackberry, cherry, no sugar, sweeteners, or calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint Water, a touch of fruit flavor. And we have the NBC 10 First Alert forecast, sponsored by DuckDuckGo. So it's really windy. That's why we have the surf advisory. So 67 degrees today, tomorrow 64 and cloudy. And as we move into the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're about 73 degrees. So kind of chilly. So they'll probably keep people off of the beaches and certainly out of the water. But kind of a chilly 73 degrees.
Well, they're going to keep them out of the water absolutely in New York, whether it's beautiful or not.
That's right.
He's going to put barbed wire and fences up.
But we have a 73-degree Memorial Day weekend, so that's nice. Oh,
that'll be nice.
We got that going for us.
Be very nice, absolutely.
If you're tired of being tracked online, DuckDuckGo can help. They help millions of people like you take control of your personal info online free. One download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding those trackers. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. I'm Dawn. CLE Show News.
Well, thank you, Dawn. Appreciate it. 855-839-1210 is our number. 855-839-1210. Taking your calls and your thoughts on everything that's going on today in the world. And would love to, by the way, we're still monitoring the situation over in Jersey with Attila's Gym, the reopening. We're monitoring it. I have on local Fox and seeing what's going to happen over there, because Governor Phil Murphy says he will not tolerate if they open up today. These are not suggestions. These are rules. And rules have consequences. They don't have consequences, though, if they violate them on the federal level, apparently, like if they are, for example, the swamp creatures at the Department of Justice, the NSA, the CIA, et cetera, who spied on innocent Americans, abused the FISA courts, and made a mockery out of the Fourth Amendment. Bill Barr, the attorney general, was discussing Obamagate. Obamagate is what the president has said regarding what Obama knew with the spying that was going on all around him. This is what the president said regarding former CIA director John Brennan, former national security guy James Clapper, and all the spying that took place before he was elected, after he was elected. This is the president, cut nine. Cut nine, Bill.
But let me tell you, Brennan bad, they're all bad, everyone. Clapper is, not smart guy in charge of intelligence. But here's the thing. It was impossible for it to happen without the man that sits right in that chair in the Oval Office. He knew everything.
Do you believe President Obama directed the U.S. intelligence agencies to spy on you?
Yes, he probably directed them, but if he didn't direct them, he knew everything.
Once they couldn't find collusion evidence. By the way, excuse me,
you're going to see that when the papers came out. Remember the Lisa Page text to her lover saying POTUS wants to see everything? POTUS. They're not talking about me. I wasn't president. They're talking about POTUS wants to see
everything.
Well,
there was a meeting on January 5th in the Oval Office. President Obama was there. Vice President Biden was there. Clapper, Brennan. And that's when the Logan Act came up. So should we believe that they were looking for collusion evidence? They couldn't find the collusion evidence. There was none. So they said, let's just use the Logan Act to take it down.
First of all, they snuck around White House counsel. They went to see a very unsuspecting General Flynn. Yeah, he's a general. He's not a lawyer. They said, you don't need a lawyer. And they started asking him questions. And they probably brought up the Logan Act. And they probably scared the hell out of him. But let me tell you a little secret. They go knock, knock, and ask K.T. McFarland the way they knocked on the door, and many other people with Mueller. That whole thing turned out to be a total fraud. The whole Mueller investigation's a fraud. It was all part of the same deal. But they, what they did to General Flynn and others, you know, we know about General Flynn. You'll find out about others, too. What they did to these people is a international disgrace. And all over the world, they talk about it, because this is not America. And hopefully the people involved are going to pay a big price, because it should never be allowed to happen again.
You know, the idea, again, like using the 1960s liberals as a standard, right? So the FBI used to spy on them all the time. The FBI spied on Dr. King. It used to spy on leaders of outspoken people on college campuses, leaders against the Vietnam movement, civil rights leaders. They'd spy on these Americans all the time, violate their constitutional rights, constitutional liberties. There was a time when the left was outraged about that, as they should have been, by the way. That stuff goes on now against Trump people, and people will go, well, who cares? Ah, no big deal. No, no, it's the same point. It's the same principle that I've been talking about the entire show today, the theme of it being that, you know, if you allow government power to go unchecked, if there's no check and balance, like if there's no checks and balances with these governors, if you allow this to occur, it will be abused. And when it's abused, whether it's the FBI spying on Dr. Martin Luther King and compiling dossiers on him, or they're doing it on Donald Trump, if they are allowed to get away with this stuff, they'll keep doing it. If governors are allowed to make executive orders and put innocent Americans in jail for violating orders, not laws passed by legislatures, but executive orders by the stroke of a pen, and that goes on indefinitely, we're not a republic anymore, right? I mean, you gotta point this stuff out. So will anything happen here? Will anything happen to these people that abuse the Constitution, used federal law enforcement to then go after their political enemies, just like they did in the 1960s? Will anything happen to them? Well, here's Attorney General Bill Barr discussing all this. Cut six.
We cannot allow this process to be hijacked by efforts to drum up criminal investigations of either candidate. And I'm committed that this election will be conducted without this kind of interference. Any effort to pursue an investigation of either candidate has to be approved by me. Now, I have a general idea of how Mr. Durham's investigation is going. And as I have indicated, some aspects of the matter are being examined as potential crimes. But we have to bear in mind what the Supreme Court recently reminded us of in the Bridgegate case. As the court said there, there's a difference between an abuse of power and a federal crime. Not every abuse of power, no matter how outrageous, is necessarily a federal crime. Now, as to President Obama and Vice President Biden, whatever their level of involvement, based on the information I have today, I don't expect Mr. Durham's work will lead to a criminal investigation of either man. Our concern over potential criminality is focused on others.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I don't know what to tell you other than I've been telling you this. So I just, it is what it is, as they always say, right? Ultimately, the people at the top will get away with it. I think that's how it works. I think the bureaucracy just protects itself. I've long said that. I've long said that that's what the bureaucracy does, and it's proven correct again today. So 855-839-1210. Doesn't make me happy, but it just points out the reality of our government. It's gotten so big and so unchecked, so powerful now that they're allowed to get away with this stuff.
The Rich Zeoli Show on your schedule. This is the Zeoli Show podcast.
All right, 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210 is our number. Now, Joe Biden is running for president, as you know. He's got an amazing new ad out. I mean, this is killer. And this is basically now all the times that Joe Biden has said this very important message throughout the course of his run for the presidency. This is a game changer for him. And I hope the Trump campaign is aware of this, because this is the kind of thing that would keep me up at night if I were running his campaign. Cut one.
Biden, president.
My name's Joe Biden. I'm running for, in this case, running for president of the United States. Look me over. If you like what you see, help out. If not, vote for the other person.
Tell you what, if you look at my record and you still doubt about my commitment, then you should vote for somebody else.
Don't vote for me.
You have to go vote for somebody else.
All right, thanks so much, sir.
You should vote for Trump. You should vote for Trump.
You got the right candidate in Bernie. You got the right one.
Well, you ought to vote for somebody else.
I'm not voting for you. Well, I knew you weren't, man. You think I thought you'd stand up and vote for me? You're too old to vote for me.
If you like what I say, help me. If you don't, vote against me.
I wouldn't vote for me.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Wow. That's hard. That's hard-hitting and powerful, I think.
Oh, my God.
That is powerful, powerful stuff right there.
Wow.
That's what we call a change. This is going to change the trajectory of the election right there.
Is this a May surprise?
This is a May, Greg, it's the famous May surprise we've talked so much about.
Yes.
That famous May surprise. I mean, all those times you look people down and boldly told them, don't vote for me.
Or insulting people and say, I know you're not voting for me.
Yeah, calling a guy fat and telling him, you know, getting off the couch. And
God.
Joe Biden, bringing America together by not voting for him. Yes. All right. All right. Very, very good. So I don't know. I'm like I said, the Trump campaign should be very worried about that, in my opinion. Very worried. Now, Nancy, what's that?
If you have some, you know, if you have some conversations, you know, with the West Wing, maybe send that their way. I'm just saying.
Well, it's the political courage it takes to look somebody in the eye over and over and over and over again to tell them, don't vote for me. That is such a game changer, politically speaking. Such an absolute game changer.
Go, you know the thing.
Now, Nancy Pelosi fat-shamed President Trump. The president revealed he was taking hydroxychloroquine for weeks. This is what the president said yesterday, causing, of course, a national freakout that he would be taking this. Cut number 11.
You'd be surprised at how many people are taking it, especially the frontline workers, before you catch it. The frontline workers, many, many are taking it. I happen to be taking it.
Hydroxychloroquine?
I'm taking it. Hydroxychloroquine. Right now, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, I started taking it. Because I think it's good. I've heard a lot of good stories. And if it's not good, I'll tell you right. I'm not going to get hurt by it. It's been around for 40 years for malaria, for lupus, for other things. I take it. Frontline workers take it. A lot of doctors take it. Excuse me. A lot of doctors take it. I take it. No, I hope to not be able to take it soon because, you know, I hope they come up with some answer. This is a pill that's been used for a long time, for 30, 40 years on the malaria and on lupus, too, and even on arthritis, I guess, from what I understand. So it's been heavily tested in terms of, I was just waiting to see your eyes light up when I said this, but, you know, when I announced this. But, yeah, I've taken it for about a week and a half now, and I'm still here.
So Nancy Pelosi went on television, the vampiric one, went on Anderson Cooper. She's not happy the president's taking this. And she decided to do a little fat shaming at the president. Cut 12.
Madam Speaker, what's your reaction to the president saying that he's now taking hydroxychloroquine? Are you concerned?
Well, first, let me say how happy I am about your new baby. How lovely.
Oh, well,
Wyatt. Wyatt, how perfectly named. We all know why that is, and congratulations. And as you are a father, you see how important it is to keep the world safe for the children, for the children. As far as the president is concerned, he's our president, and I would rather he not be taking something that has not been approved by the scientist, especially in his age group and in his, shall we say, weight group, what is morbidly obese, they say. So I think it's not a good idea.
This is a Speaker of the House fat-shaming the President of the United States on Anderson Cooper's show last night. The fatty should not be taking that. I'm just saying.
First of
Chubby over there at the West Wing. What's that?
First of all, HCQ, you cannot get it without a prescription. So even though they asked him and he said he asked for it, if you ask for it, your doctor still has to approve it. So his doctor prescribed it to him.
Well, does his doctor know he's morbidly obese?
The doctor knows everything, we would hope.
So the doctor is Dr. Feelgood for fat people. He likes to give out pills for people who are morbidly obese to feel good, Jake. That's very good. You don't think it's a little bit weird that she's going on TV to fat shame the president?
I thought it was mean. I mean,
it's a little mean, right?
It is mean because the truth is we all know, like, we could lose a few pounds or whatever. But
like, you could just focus on him taking the drug, then not have to do the fat shaming at the end, right? You could just focus on, well, I don't think you should be taking this. It's not approved for the treatment of coronavirus. Boom, end it right there.
Yeah.
But instead, she's got to dig in on his weight with those love handles of his. And she's just so happy to do it, too. Did you notice that?
Yes.
So happy.
But I think my take when people were talking about it is like, you know, I just think everybody thinks, well, she's talking about me too. Do you know what I mean?
She's fat shaming all of us.
Yes.
Well, we've all gained the COVID-19 during this. So, you know, right?
It's a battle. I've gained only 2 pounds, but I've been dieting so much. So it's just so hard.
2 pounds. I'll gain that before the end of the show today. No.
But it's like, it's so hard to maintain a good weight during this lockdown.
Well,
it's nearly
true.
Impossible.
That's true. And when Nancy Pelosi says that, I think a lot of people watching are probably thinking, like, well, that's kind of rude, right?
I was surprised. It was like, ooh, that's mean.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the thing. The fat shaming is it works sometimes, it doesn't work other times. you know, what can I tell you?
Mama
that's
Zioli.
Why.
Be nice, like Mama Zioli says.
Be nice, baby. Yes. Don't fat shame him, Madam Vampiric One. It's mean.
Oh, be careful, baby.
Be nice. Be nice. Now, of course, with all of this controversy around all this, you know, we have to think to ourselves a little bit about is this now every day we're going to have another, you know, battle between Pelosi? Yeah, until she gets her money. That's what she wants. She wants $4 trillion now for all of her funding projects. And that's the reality of what she wants right now. But there's a lot of business owners who are hurting out there. And there's a lot of people questioning whether or not they're going to be able to keep going. I mean, I saw a story yesterday, and this could be Pennsylvania. This could be anywhere. New Jersey main streets are desolated due to the coronavirus. And now they begin reopening for curbside pickup. So we've had these big box stores open for a while, but we have not had these little mom and pop stores open. And now they're beginning to reopen, but the reopening is obviously going to be very, very tough. You know, people that have been selling, for example, on Main Street in America, toys and books, they've had a tough time. Candles, I mean, they've had a tough time before all this. Then they had to shut down for several months while big box stores were allowed to remain open. Now they're slowly reopening. But they still can't have people in their stores in many cases. Like in New Jersey, for example, it's still curbside pickup only. So you could have a little mom and pop store selling, I don't know, whatever. I mean, pick your thing, right? And then people still cannot come into the store and look around. So they have to know what you have, which means you got to have a website or something like that. People have to take the time to order it and then have you bring it out to the curb. But you can go into Walmart. You can go into Home Depot. You're allowed to go into Lowe's. You can go into Target. See what I mean about the reason why people are frustrated by that? You're allowed to go into those big stores. You have to wear a mask, but you can't go into a small store, even if you wear a mask. That's not safe. You get it? I don't. Makes no sense. If the mask protects you in Home Depot, why doesn't it protect you at Margie's Candle Store on Main Street, USA? Well, then, if it doesn't protect you in Margie's Candle Store, how do you know it's protecting you in Lowe's? If it does protect you in Lowe's, it should protect you in Margie's Candle Store. So why would you not allow people inside Margie's Candle Store to look around and buy stuff? Social distance, limit the amount of people in the store, do all that stuff, but why would you not let them in? But this is what I mean. This is the condescension coming out of Murphy in New Jersey. He has decided, without the legislature weighing in, much like Tom Wolf, without the legislator weighing in, that this is how it's going to be. And if you defy him, well, it's not going to end well for you. He unilaterally has made this decision. Now, imagine if the legislature, like was supposed to happen, we had a check and balance, and the legislature was actually debating this. And they said, Mr. President or Mr. Speaker, I rise today to say that the mask policy in New Jersey should allow people to go into every store in New Jersey, not just big box stores, but every store. Every store is essential. Every business is essential. So I move today that we allow everybody to go into stores in New Jersey as long as they maintain social distancing and spacing and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then the legislature could debate the merits of that. They could pass a bill. The governor could sign it or veto it. They could override his veto. You see, the way it's supposed to work? The way it's supposed to work. Not this, where one guy decides for everybody, one tyrant decides for everybody else. This is the problem. This is what I mean. Why can't you go into a mom and pop chocolate store, but you can go into Target? There's going to be more people at Target than there are at the little mom and pop chocolate store. So what's the why? Why do we decide this policy? We didn't decide this policy. One person decided this policy. Now explain to me why that's good for America when one person makes a decision unilaterally in any area of life. It's not, right? It's not. Makes no sense. So my question again is, how long does this go on for? Does this go on forever? Forever and ever and ever? What's the backup plan? 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. On Twitter, at Rich Zeoli, Facebook.com/Zeoli Show.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.